Okay, so again, the next topic is graphic engineering. And the idea here is that you can have more users in a cell than you have channels. But you still want some handle on how many users you can have and what's the cost of having those users. Okay. So this idea has been around for a long time. And it's the original analysis was done by Erlang. And for the panel is sort of switch capacity for the telephone networks. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a look at what he said and did, and we're going to pretty much apply it as is to cellular networks, which means that we're going to be ignoring this idea of mobility, so we're going to assume that our users are staying within one cell for the duration of a call. Obviously, this doesn't have to happen, so it is an assumption. Okay. So, what we want to do is get some measure of likely usage. And this is so likely usage is going to be referred to as traffic intensity. And it's a number of different ways you think of traffic intensity. The unit for traffic intensity is what's called an airline. And the basic idea is that if one airline, that would keep one channel busy constantly. Okay. And that's some sort of statistical measure of that. Okay. So there's a number of ways in which you can interpret this traffic intensity. It's the average number of simultaneously busy channels. Okay, so again, that sounds like a good measure. You know, on average, how many channels are in use? You may want something more than that. Provisioned. Okay, now, so you can just observe the channels, or you can observe something about the call patterns, so it's the time of the calls, or the time. Time for the channels. So it's the ratio of the sum of busy times of the channels to observation time. Okay, so essentially it's giving you another way to calculate the average. Or looking at it from the user side, it's the average number of calls accomplished in the time it takes to, on average, to make a single call. Okay, so if you think about it, you have the duration of a single call, and you have a certain number of more calls being made, then that's, you know, again, that's what you need to provision for. Okay, so I probably ought to remove this slide since it's here. Again, we're not really going to go into any of that back, so formulas aren't that useful. Okay, there's two parameters, again, that last definition, that are determining the system. There's the rate at which calls are attempted, so the arrival rate of calls. And then there's the holding time of successful calls, so in how long on average does each call last. Okay. The traffic intensity is then given by lambda times h. This is the Little's law or that's our last definition of traffic intensity. Okay, we can interpret that in a number of ways. We can think of it as a normalized version of lambda. So lambda is an overall rate. This is a rate relative to the duration of a call. And again, for that one airline is going to keep a single channel. We can also relate this to the number of channels times the amount of time the system is busy. So basically, if everything is predictable and can be scheduled, one airline of traffic would be equivalent to one channel. The problem is that these are all statistical measures. And so, just to look at an example, suppose we have 20 calls per minute and the average holding time is 3 minutes. Then, you'd have, on average, during the duration of a single call, 60 attempted calls. So, you need at least 60 channels to deal with that. It seems clear. You know, if such 60 people are trying to call, then in the time it takes to make a call, then you need 60 of those going on. So 50's not going to work. You could just provide 60 channels, but again, all this is statistical. At some point, 70 people might get it into their heads to try and make calls. You only have 60 channels, 10 of those people are going to be disappointed. So you need some number over 60, and so, you know, pick whatever number you want, and the more channels you provide, the more likely that no matter how many people try and make calls, they'll all be catered for. But you know, there's an issue of efficient use of resources. The more channels, the more cost, and you need more wireless systems. You may not even be able to provide more channels. So limit on the number of channels. Okay. So the question, the question of interest is: so we know something about the usage, and how can we play off the number of channels versus the likelihood that somebody's going to be disappointed? Okay, so you know, again, we're going to try to pick some level of support. And again, patterns vary on the day. For cellular systems, they vary regionally per time of day. So you know, you can play around with that, but you know, you want to decide that some number of channels that you're going to provide for the users. If at some point there's more users than number of channels, again, then they're just disappointed. And you're going to ask the question of what percentage of the users are disappointed. Typically, if you're a telephone company, you're required to provide some level, some statistical level of access. Okay.
Okay.
So, again, the network usage patterns vary with time, and obviously differences vary. Things differently, although we can disaggregate them into some sort of average. What we want to do then is to provision our network relative to that average usage. You're never going to be able to account for all possible situations. This provisioning exercise is what's referred to as trunking. And the idea here is that you have a certain number of channels available to some much larger number of users. And the way you get away with this is, again, the assumption that the users aren't always using the resource. So, again, if you think back to networks, you had statistical multiplexing of packets. You made the assumption that not everybody was always needing bandwidth, just sometimes. Okay. So, in actuality, if you have a radio system, usually you have upload and download pairs, and of course, there'll be two. Channels according to calibration and updated lists. Then the probability of blocking refers to the likelihood that the user attempting to connect the system isn't going to be able to. Now, again, if you think about telephone calls, then if you can't connect to the system, usually you're assumed to go away and try again, and sometimes that's about every day. So this is what's called a lost system, so that you make your attempt. If it doesn't succeed, then you've lost that chance. And you go away and try again later. The contrast is with a holding system where you might wait, like in a call center, if you call and the call is being processed, and then get the news out, and there's a different type of behavior. Aaron actually addresses both of these. We're just going to look at the loss model. Okay. So, lost call cleared, so if the system's busy, the call's not made. That's what we're looking at versus lost call held. If the system is busy, the user just waits. Okay. And again, the reason I mentioned that there are two flavors is that Erlang studied both of these and came up with models for both of these. The one that we're interested in is Erlang B, so lost call cleared, again, there's also an Erlang C, lost call held. Okay, so we said that, again, there's some chance that the user might be disappointed, might lose their call. And so, again, we said that the blocking probability within the telephone world, it's also referred to as grade of service. Okay, so it's a measure of the probability of blocking. And so now we have these three factors. We've got the network load, we've got our grade of service, and then we have the number of channels we have available to satisfy this. Okay. And so what Analog B does is it relates these three factors and says the probability of blocking is a function of the offered load and the number of channels you have.
Okay.
Now, typically, what you have in practice is that you have some target probability, and then either you know your offered load and you want to know how many channels you need, or you know how many channels you have, so you want to see, well, what's the load that can accommodate. So typically you have to sort of try to unwind this formula. Can't really do it mathematically. The results, therefore, are usually used either as either a table or a graph.
Okay. Okay, I'm just going to forward through. Okay, so the graph will look something like this.
So you have your grade of surface, or your probability of blocking, you have your traffic intensity, and then you have each of these lines represents a certain number of channels.
Okay.
Now, again, if you're going to derive this, there are a whole lot of assumptions being made about behavior systems, and they're all mathematically modelable.
Whether these actually hold or not, is who knows. Okay. So anyway, we'll get this
series of plots or curves, and each line or curve is associated with a specific n, and we'll then relate traffic intensity versus curves. Okay. And so usually what we do is, again, we have a target grade of service, and then we're looking at traffic intensity versus the
versus the number of channels we have available. Okay, so
for purposes of this lecture, we're going to look at these these plots.
It's also available in tabular form, so when you do your exercises, I'll give you a table that you can read these sorts of values off of. Okay. So,
again, if you just look at, so you have two channels, and again, if you have a certain grade of service required, that would tell you what your maximum traffic intensity was. If you have a certain traffic intensity that you're aiming for, as well as a certain grade of service, then again, you'll see how many channels you need to do that.
In general, there's a few points we can make.
First is that a large capacity system is more efficient than a small capacity system in getting the same grade of service.
And so, if you think about, well, if you have two cells and you're splitting the channels between the two cells, well, if all the users are over here in this cell, you can't then you can have spare capacity, which the users can't use, right? Whereas if you have one large cell, then any free channel can be allocated to any user.
So intuitively that makes sense. We'll just go and see how it works according to our Aragon formula. Okay, so we have two cells with capacity of 10 channels, or one cell with capacity of 20 channels.
So the same number of channels, either split up into two or kept as one.
We have a probability of blocking is 0.002. And what we want to do then is see for 10 and 20 channels,
what is the traffic intensity that we can have.
So if we look at 10 channels and a grade of service of 0.002, so that's the green line, then the horizontal line, you get the traffic intensity for the center about 3.4. Now that's per cell, so overall you have a traffic intensity twice out of 6.8. If you look at 20 channels, hopefully this one, follow it down to the 0.002 grade of service, and drop it down to the traffic intensity, we see
we have traffic intensity of 10. So
again, what we see is that we can handle a higher traffic intensity by keeping the channels together. Okay, and again, intuitively that makes sense, because if you split them up, then you have an additional factor of how the users are distributing themselves within the different cells.
Having said that, large capacity systems are more sensitive to increases in traffic. So
a smaller percentage increase in traffic will lead to bigger changes in the rate of service, or you look at specific drop in grade of service that will require sort of bigger changes in traffic for small cells relative to less number of channels relative to more number of channels.
Okay, so again, if we look at an example of that, we have
one cell with 10 channels at a grade of service of 0.02, that gives us a mode 3.4. Airlines, and we can ask the question, if we want to reduce the grade of service and increase the probability of blocking 0.01, what does that require? And then do the same thing for 70 channels.
Okay. Okay, so this is looking now at our 10-channel system.
And so as before, the green line, we have a grade of service of 0.02. And 10 channels, we have our traffic intensity of 3.4. Now, if we want to worsen our grade of service of 0.01, we're going to follow the 10 down and drop it down and get traffic intensity about 4.4. And so that's about a 30%
increase in usage that's needed to make that drop. On the other hand, if we look at our
70 channels,
so before, so if we look at a creative service, bringing on 0.02, we can track it in density 51. And if you look at the red now, the creative service of 0.01, we get a traffic density 56.
Now that's only about a 10% increase in load, so 10% amount increase in the amount of traffic gives you, again, the same decrease in grade of service. Okay, 11% ago. So, again, the airline in general is used to try to examine these trade-offs. So again, typically you have a target rate of service. The first thing you're going to ask is, well, what's the load now, and what do I need to accommodate? How many channels do I need to accommodate that load? But you might also want to consider, well, load changes that tends to increase with time. So okay, so again, if you think about users not being mobile and just sort of being in the cell or out of the cell, well, sort of in a cell for the duration of the call, then Carolyn works mathematically pretty well. If you take mobility into account, you have not only your calls, but you have calls arriving from other cells. And so typically these, if you think of calls as having an average duration, well, they'll spend that duration partially in one cell, partially in another. Okay. Similarly, when you think about finishing a call, they'll either call completes or the user's just moved out of range. Okay, so the arrival and completion patterns are not quite the same as they should be for the airline model. And so they can get to the range complex, and so typically these would be. Really keen to get a good handle on this, you might study it via a simulation model. But this does give us at least the first cut at what we need to consider. Okay, now for our final topic, we have we've looked at how you lay out the cellular systems, and based on how you lay out your system, you have a certain number of channels per cell, and so that gives you your capacity in terms of channels, and then you can further examine that to look at capacity in terms of users. So the next question is, well, if we want to improve on that capacity, typically in terms of the number of channels we can offer, or possibly in terms of the number of users we can accommodate, how do we do this? Okay. And so you can do things somewhat within the cell, or we can try and play out, you can try and trade off channels overall. So within a cell, you can add new channels if they're available. And that can be done by borrowing channels from adjacent cells, potentially. You can also try to subdivide your cell into a series of smaller cells. Cell, but since it's over a smaller area, you have less users in that area, and therefore greater capacity for the user. Okay. You can do what's called cell sectoring, which is to use now directional antennas, and the purpose of this is to decrease intercell interference, and therefore potentially increasing the channels available. And finally, there's sort of the press idea instead of, so we find a little microcell zones. Here we rearrange the way the antennas are placed. Of channels. Okay, so we'll go through all of those. And possibly overall, we can examine sort of on a whole network basis, examine the channel assignments. Specific to CDMA, you have cell breathing, which again is that you change the area of cells depending on use. The more crowded a cell is, you start shrinking down the size of the cell. Okay, so there's all sorts of different channel assignment strategies. So there's fixed strategies, which again, it's not exactly fixed, it's fixed sort of relative to the user, so some plan is channels are allocated and the users just deal with them. There's dynamic strategies of here. Things are done on per call, so it is done relative to the user. Anytime the user enters the network, then the channel is found for that. These are sort of pre-plans. This is per user, or you can have some sort of mix of the two. Okay. So fixed strategies are nice because you can plan everything ahead of time. But again, you aren't necessarily going to maintain much flexibility if usage changes. Is to possibly just borrow channels from neighboring cells, and so just keep some track of what's being borrowed. Obviously, this is going to have some implication for things like interference, and again, there's a question how it responds to changes in usage. Okay, so up to a certain level, borrowing improves the probability of blocking, so it decreases the probability of blocking. But if everything is, if all of the cells are heavily utilized, then you end up getting non-optimal So you can try to get some sort of half-by-half between so divide yourselves into two categories, something about it and something can't. Beyond that, you can
determine how many cells belong, how many channels belong in each of those categories. Okay. So again, that's all done on a pre-planned basis.
Dynamic strategies work on a per-call basis, so channels aren't assigned to any particular cell, but rather when a call comes in, then the decision is made as to what channel that call should be served on. And again, the problem with this is that it's very difficult to decide on what's the best channel to give to any given call.
Okay, and again, flexible strategies would just seem to
combine dynamic and fixed strategies. So you have a certain number of channels which would actually be pre-allocated, and then the remaining channels would be converted to higher traffic density cells.
As needed basis. Okay, so anyway, so you can play around a bit with channels. The other option is, again, to change your basic layout. And in some way change the
nature of the cell. So one option for doing that is cell splitting. And so here we just subdivide our cells into smaller cells. So within that, you're going to need a new base station per cell, so there's some limit to how much you can do that. With cell splitting, the reuse factor stays constant. What you're doing is you're shrinking the size of the cell, and therefore the channels allocated to each cell stays constant, but again this channel set is now being allocated to a smaller area, and therefore you have a greater channel density. Okay. And so if we look at this again in terms of power, the power is relative to the drops of the distance to some factor. And so at the edge of the cell it's dropped by its radius. We drop the cell radius by 2. Four smaller cells, but we can reduce the amount of power that we need to get to the cell boundary.
Okay, so that's one plus, and
again, the other plus is just that you have more cells in the same coverage area. So reduce both the R, so our reuse factor is the same, but what we see is where we used to have a single cluster, we now have four clusters. And we'll put that distributed, but you have four times the number of channels in the same area.
Okay. So,
for every halving of the radius size, we get an improvement in transmit power, or improvement in the sense that we can reduce our transmit power, and we increase our system capacity by
a power of 4. Four to the end, so I should say.
Okay, so those are the two benefits.
The issues with doing this are a couple. First of all, every time we do this reduction in cell radius, we have to put up another base station, or about 4 more base stations. And so that's cost incurred. You like to be able to decrease power, but you still have to keep maintain. There's a limit to that in the sense that you also have to overcome noise factors, so the signals and noise ratio must be maintained, not just the signal interference ratio. And as you shrink the size of the cell, if your users are mobile, so if they're moving, you're going to have to do more handovers. Okay, and each handover does take a certain amount of time, so if you have made yourself too tiny, users would be passing through them before the handover could be accomplished. Okay. So it's a good technique, but you know, it only works so far. Okay, so cell cycling in microcell zones seek to maintain the cell size while controlling or minimizing the signal to interference ratio. And so we'll start with cell sectoring. And the idea is that we divide our cell into a number of regions served by directional antennas. Looking at hexagons, you probably divide into 3 or 6. If you're looking at diamonds, you might divide into 4. And what this serves to do is to reduce the signal interference ratio. So if you look at the hexagonal case, any antenna has now a direction in which it's transmitting, and so we can see that in this case, of the adjacent cells, only 2 of them, this one and this one, would actually interfere with this signal. So we get less interference due to the direction. You're also moving the regions of slightly higher away, usually the main signal system, by decreasing the number of interference cells. The price of this is why you need more equipment, and within these cells, for each region, the overall capacity of the cells, the overall channel set is split within the cell now, so even within the cell, you can end up with it. Okay. And as we just noted, the more we split up our channel set, we're decreasing the efficiency of the utilization.
to get the government to kind of see this part of the cell.
You can't just move the channels with cell sectoring. Okay, so again,
our SIR instead of being 1/6 is now 1/2, so it's increased by a factor of 30. The reuse factor has dropped, so we need less cells now per cluster, and therefore we need more channels per cell. Example, given SIR, for a sector of the system, you get less cells required, and therefore more channels within the cells.
Okay, so again, the problem, the main problem with that is
not within the cell, you're not necessarily making efficient use of the channels that you have. You have more of them, but you still split them up, so you're not making terribly efficient use of them. Microcell zones retain this idea of directional antennas limiting the interference, but now they change the layout of the antennas, so they're now at the edges of the cell pointing inwards. And so you get the same reduction in intercell interference, but now as a user travels through the cells, you can just change the antenna for which the communication is achieved. Okay. So you don't have to maintain the same channel anywhere in the cell, but that the channel is established through different antennas. So you've eliminated the use of intercell, infracell, and over. And you're making more efficient use of the channels because any given antenna has access to all of the channels. Again, for CDMA, we use what's called cell breathing. And essentially, what cell-breathing does is it just changes the size of the cells according to the number of users. So if a cell is becoming congested, so there are a lot of users, the cell shrinks its area, which means that users are handed off to adjacent cells, which are hopefully less crowded. And by shrinking the area, you're able to limit the number of users you have within the cell. Okay. So that's it for sort of basics of cellular systems. So we've had a look at what sort of techniques are used to provide sort of large-scale coverage for mobile users. I posted a problem which sort of brings together the idea of traffic engineering and cell planning, and so have a look at it. We'll take up with that next lecture, just sort of to summarize some of these ideas. I've also posted now the assignment. It's due week 12.
4 years who will undoubtedly ignore it until their projects are in. Don't totally ignore it. I didn't say that, so have a look and make sure you understand what's going on. So it's based on wireless LAN, so I'm going to give a wireless LAN presentation next week, and then I'll have the demonstrator in presenting NS3. I think probably a good portion of you are familiar with NS3 at this point, but the demonstrator will present the basics, and they can help you install with installation issues, either on the day or later on. So that's and then after that we'll return to cellular systems, and we'll look at the actual, sort of how things work in actual systems, so 2G, 3G, 4G systems. Okay, so that's it for today, and then we'll see you guys next week.